Good morning. Today is birthday.
Mine.
September the 10th.
Happy
Joining
birthday.
Us this morning. Thank you, sir.
Wow, fantastic.
I appreciate the gifts that you brought also and the flowers and the whole spread here in front of us. It's truly, truly an honor to have you here this morning.
It's our privilege. It's our privilege to send you, bring gifts for you on this esteemed day.
Yes, yeah. Gee, just imagine if it was a major one. Well, and you brought Michael along too, so I mean, it's
that's
yeah.
That's
I was going to talk about hallucinations, but apparently you're having some this morning.
Fine, smart guy. Here we go. Or why do they say that? Why does bedlam mean riotous noise?
Crickets.
Yeah, I'm noticing. I would not use the term bedlam at this moment, because bedlam was the name of a London lunatic asylum.
Did you know that, Michael?
This one's for you, big guy.
No.
All right. About the year 1247, a priory was founded in London called St. Mary of Bethlehem. The name was soon shortened to Bethlehem and then Bedlam. Some 300 years later, the priory was turned into a house of detention for the insane, and the wild ravings of its inmates gave Bedlam its present meaning.
You know?
You knew it went back to the church, didn't you? I'll beat you to the punch.
Every day we learn something. What a way to start a Monday off. Thank you very much.
Well, and now all the principals throughout the county.
Bedlam.
They've got the word. Yeah.
If you run out of jokes sometime, Chris, when you're giving a presentation, you could always give reference to the
Bedlam.
To the Bedlam.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, we'll put that in the back pocket. Thank you. appreciate the help there.
Michael, you're back in town. Nice to see you again.
Thank you very much.
Now that you're filling back out and not looking like you're on meth or starving,
yeah,
nice to see you.
I've definitely filled out.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Chris, why'd you bring him along?
Well, for a few reasons. One, Michael took on this enormous challenge of the race across America. And not only for personal reasons, but unselfishly to help the early literacy program that we have at Humboldt County Office of Education. And we did a couple of interviews. So this is kind of like the wrap-up. So we did a pre-interview before he left on his journey. We actually did. Do you remember, Michael? Remember the on-the-road interview
I was
that we
in
did?
In Kansas, Chris. Remember it was a morning in Kansas. You know,
all right,
cornfields and flat ground.
And he was singing Oklahoma.
Well, there were moments of delirium we've heard about from Michael's own words, you know, and I was curious if you remembered our interview or not. So,
I do.
So we did that. And then, so Brian, this is an opportunity for us to wrap up this.
Cool, summary show.
Yeah.
So now that it's kind of down and done and fond memories are starting to kick in instead of, you know, saddle sores.
We call it ramnesia.
Is
setting in.
Okay. It's going to be a really long,
it's
ugly
just
show,
in
isn't
here,
it?
Folks,
yeah.
Bedlam.
Yeah. What two or three general impressions do you have of the entire process?
Yeah. I would say that number one, it was just an incredible journey. So the journey itself was just amazing. You know, to traverse the United States in a car is quite an experience. On a bicycle, you don't just see things. You know, you get to encounter things with all five senses, and that was just
including
amazing.
Taste.
Including, oh, you betcha. The second thing I would say is around the relationships that were developed throughout that race. Not only the relationships of our team, my support team. I had 10 people that supported me throughout the race, that followed me and provided me with the support that I needed, but also with just ordinary American folks across the breadth of the United States. I had people that just came out of their driveways to cheer me on, families that presented me with gifts that I had no idea who these people were, but they were just so gracious and supportive. And the reason I'm saying that is that, you know, if we think about the narrative of the United States currently as a place of division, of a place of conflict and violence, that is not the America that I saw and experienced in the race across America.
I bet you it's not the America most people experience either.
No.
It's more whipped up for various reasons.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And it's mainstream media. You know, if we'd really prescribe to that, then that's the impression that we get. And I'm here to say, no way, man. That's not what I saw.
That's awesome.
Summertime isn't necessarily the best time of the year to be going through certain parts of this country.
The desert.
Be like winter wouldn't be the right time for certain parts of the country. How impactful was the weather?
Very impactful. Right off the bat, actually, the desert was absolutely brutal. I can't describe it any other way. In April, I'd gone down to the desert to do some training for the heat, because, of course, in coastal Humboldt County, we don't get a lot of the heat here. But unfortunately, I didn't experience heat during that time in training. I actually got a cold front that came through that whipped up a sandstorm in the desert. So I had, 40-mile-an-hour winds, but not a lot of heat. So I guess in many ways I was ill-prepared for the heat aspect of things. So once I dropped, it started at Oceanside, I dropped into the Anza Borrego Desert, and it was like dropping into a furnace. It went from like 80 degrees at the top of Montezuma Grade, about 4,000 feet, down to the desert floor, and it came up to well over 100 degrees. And that was it. And then for the next 3 days, that was the heat that I dealt with, and it was... It was brutal.
What was the hottest day? Do you know that? Did you get a number?
I think it was somewhere out. I don't have a number, but it was somewhere in the region of like 110, and that was between Parker and Prescott, I would say. So crossing
into back up. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would be. Did you run into much rain?
I did. In fact, that's what kind of put an end to my race, really. In Ohio, we had tremendous thunderstorms. So I came out of the heat, crossed the Rockies, which was absolutely stunningly beautiful, and then dropped down. And once we dropped down, actually, from eastern Kansas onwards, we dealt with thunderstorms fairly regularly, pretty severe ones.
That explained the little lightning rod on your helmet.
Yeah. Felt like one.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Chris Hartley from the County Office of Ed and Michael Davis Hughes, the bicycle dude.
Bike guy.
Yeah.
That's not my official job title, by the way.
Should be. Then you could be the bike cop, too. Huh?
Wouldn't that add to the resume? You already have somebody at Eureka.
I know. Yeah, Chris is, yeah. But
the patrols on the bicycle. No,
bicycle only. Make sure that they don't ride them on the campus. That was a big thing when I was going through. Don't ride your bike on campus at Zane or at Worthington or at Eureka High.
Did you follow the rules, Brian?
Yeah, I was always impressed that I could figure out how to ride the bike in the morning. I didn't really want to get off of it too early. So you mentioned Ohio and thunderstorms.
Yes.
And that kind of spelled the end of the event for you.
It did for me. Yeah.
Formally. Did you finish the route just...
Well, I did.
Because you were going to do it and you wanted to?
Yeah. No, actually, we finished it in the car. So we did that last piece, actually, in my follow vehicle. Because I had to get to the end, we had an awards banquet on Saturday evening, and then my family had flown out, and I was going to be flying out with some of the team back to California to be back at work. So we were on a bit of a timeline. So for me to continue, it would have really put us behind. I mean, to continue knowing that we weren't going to make it by the time cutoff. Mm-hmm. So it was, I think the desert, like I mentioned, had put me behind like a whole day. If I had been able to manage through that desert a little faster, I wouldn't have been playing catch up the rest of the time.
Would that have made it enough?
Absolutely.
That was enough buffer you would have been able to?
I absolutely would have made it. I mean, well, in my own mind, I definitely feel that.
So heat training is what nailed you.
Yeah, just an acceptance that it was going to be hot. I don't know if that training would have made a difference at that point, but so much of it is psychological, you know.
Just knowing what you're going to drop into then.
Knowing what, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What you're going to feel. Makes sense.
Would you do it again?
I would do it again. A couple of reasons. One is it was just an amazing experience, and the support from the community back here in Humboldt County while I was on the road was palpable. I mean, it was an honor and a privilege to be able to do it, so I'd like to be able to do that again. And also to raise money. You know, it is a vehicle for raising funds. We were able to raise $30,000 for the Early Literacy Partners Program. And
was that about what you were hoping for?
Yeah, it was. We'd actually set a goal of $50,000 for fundraising. And we had two fundraising efforts. One was for the Early Literacy Partners Program, which was the primary one. But it was also if people wanted to contribute towards offsetting the operating costs of the race itself, which are pretty large, then they could do that. And we raised $20,000 for the team to be able to actually compete in the race. So
50 total came.
So we did. Yeah, we reached $50,000. So that was great.
Yeah.
And then the other reason to want to do it again, of course, is that little itch that I can't scratch at the very end. We missed that little last bit. I've got to see it through.
So from Ohio out.
Yes.
Do you go through the Appalachians?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You do go through the Appalachians. And that actually is the kicker. That is more difficult than the Rockies. Even though in the Rockies we climbed up to just under 11,000 feet at Wolf Creek Pass. The Appalachians don't go as high, but they're much more, what I'd say, pitchy, right? So really short, steep grades. And of course, you're at the end of the race. So you're 11 days into riding for basically 20 hours per day for those 11 days. So you're pretty tired by then.
So what if you backed it down and said, okay, 10 hours a day and we're going to take enough time? Could you do it without the intense training that was done?
I could not have trained less. And I trained a lot, but I don't feel like I could have trained less and been prepared just for the physical demand of the race itself. It is absolutely brutal. That's the only way I can describe it.
Well, even just driving that far, I'm sure that the support crew was pretty fatigued also.
They were. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, at nighttime hours, which were, for the race purposes, was between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m., so that 12-hour period, they had to be behind me on a direct follow for within 20 feet of me. So you can imagine that is really fatiguing. I'm glad they didn't knock me down. Actually.
No texting and driving.
No texting and driving. But you know what was interesting in terms of the team coming together? We had several evenings where the night shift crew, because, you know, people, we'd have a rotation of crew, obviously. And during the night shift, we'd have these conversations just about, because I had a Bluetooth system, hands-free system that I was able to communicate directly with the follow vehicle, and we would spend hours just having conversation. We call them Toronto talks because the Bluetooth system for my bicycle helmet was a Toronto system. So we call them Toronto talks, and we talked about all kinds of stuff. And I got to know these people so intimately that I really didn't know before in the same way. So that was pretty special.
You know, now if Chris starts talking about retreats and wants to bring you in as a facilitator.
Yeah.
Toronto talks.
Run.
call him the Toronto talks.
Yeah.
You got a buzzword there.
Oh, gee. It seems like it would be a kick in the pants, as anything does when you got single focus. And it gets you into different areas. The geography that you experienced.
Yeah.
There must have been some jaw-dropping moments of just, you would have pulled over and taken pictures if you were so inclined, or maybe the troops did.
Yeah.
What areas really struck you?
Yeah. Well, I was awestruck by a number of different vistas that I was able to take in. In Monument Valley, it was interesting. When I went into the race, I thought, you know, Monument Valley is going to be one of those places that I am really looking forward to. It's going to be spectacular. You have these massive rock outcroppings. But I did not like Monument Valley at all. Now, part of the reason is that it was blazing hot. There was a slight headwind. It was the middle of the day, and it was just, you know, so it just was not the right time.
You were huffy-puffy going through there.
I was not a happy camper.
Yeah.
However, dropping into the eastern side of the Rockies in Colorado. We dropped into a valley that houses the town of Lavada, Colorado. What an amazing place. My goodness me. Just spectacular.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop with Mr. Hartley, who's decided he's not going to wait for his introduction. He's just going to keep talking and talking and talking. Kind of, you'd think he was a teacher.
Well, we got a lot of hot air.
Could have come in handy on the bike trip. Chris Hartley and Michael Davis Hughes are with us this morning. Guys, the concept of creative fundraising is something that I think could be really intoxicating. Hmm. How do we do it? How's it different? And every time you're kind of keeping things unique. Is that an oversimplification? Is that something that you want to do, is to have different types of, not necessarily long or elongated races like this, but just different ways of allowing the community to either be involved or to have some of the various programs highlighted?
Well, I can talk just briefly about the experience back home while Michael's doing his race. And creative fundraising is an interesting way to put it, but it certainly brought in people's involvement, and they felt a part of something versus just holding a silent auction or another, evening dinner type of deal, where in this case, the Humboldt County office staff, I wasn't sure we were going to get any actual work done because everybody was glued to their darn computers watching what was going on with Michael. So there was this intrinsic connection to his journey, and I think we did a really nice job keeping in touch with him, and through media outlets like this one right here and others, his story was being shared, and of course the access to it through the website was just fantastic. So I think that opened up a whole new way of thinking about fundraising, is connecting it to somebody's personal journey and an experience that, gosh, people got really into it, and it mirrored really well with the Early Literacy Program, which is a program based on community, and it's based on volunteers in our community who give their time, their most precious resource is time, to come in and help students learn how to read and sit with kiddos and read with them and do some math and develop a mentorship with students. And in a lot of ways, it was really connected to Michael's experience. And so, I think it's something we would want to duplicate again, because it certainly got a lot of buy-in from our local community.
It would be intriguing, and if you could have, now kind of a follow-up,
Sure.
Bike with Mike or something, just maybe not quite so obnoxious, but a little bit more.
Creative. That's pretty obnoxious.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
But I was saying, some of the national parks, the state parks that are in the area, and just kind of something akin to that, so that people can, either the supporters who were there or maybe the kids themselves, kind of bond or have a little bit of participation, kind of like going to a camp for basketball or the spring training camps or the fantasy camps, that kind of stuff, where people can kind of personally start to experience what you went through, whether it was the diet or, 20 hours a day. Not too many of us stay up 20 hours a day, let alone do something for 20 hours a day. Yeah, I guess some of us might be able to sit in front of a TV for 20 hours without going dingy, but not too many of us, let alone, balance, coordination, and all the various things that were going on, some way to kind of experience firsthand what you went through.
Yeah, what was interesting was that I never really felt alone. And I don't mean that just from the team perspective. It was a solo event, right? I was the only one riding the bicycle. However, I always felt that I had other people present, you know, that I had a community behind me that was backing me. And that really motivated me every day. I think it goes back to that, you know, relationship piece of things and making that personal connection. One of the things that we did is each day I rode for two students that were benefiting from the Early Literacy Partners program. And we had a poster size photo that we placed on the follow vehicle of those students every day. And I tell you what, that really did motivate me and lift my spirits and gave purpose to what I was doing. And the other thing, I think that when people feel personally connected and involved in an effort, you know, and this was obviously an extreme in terms of effort, people tend to want to be maybe more giving of their time and of their money if they really feel a personal connection with that event. Like Chris said, if it's a one-off event, as an live auction or whatever it might be, that's one thing. But if you're involved in something over a longer period of time, you know, in this case, 12 days, and you're able to access it in many ways, whether it be on radio or through the internet, I think that developing that personal connection and then that story, like right. over the course of this race, a story developed, not just about me, but just a story of this journey. And people were part of that. Like they felt they were part of that journey. And I think that's fantastic.
Part of the magic, yeah.
Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:42. We will be back.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Chris Hartley and Michael Davis Hughes. Michael, some of the different challenges, weather, you talked about it already. Sunburn.
Oh, yes.
Wind, chafing, drying out, you know, that kind of the physicalness of the, not muscle fatigue, but everything else.
Yeah.
Did that kind of creep up on you?
Oh, it did. In fact, one of the surprises for me, I think, was the inside of my mouth. So, you know, I've got this dry, hot air combined with these foods that I'm not really used to eating. And the inside of my mouth became like the surface of the moon, you know, like
really?
Cratered and just, yeah, it was pretty nasty. And then saddle sores. I mean, that is something that's inevitable on a long distance journey like that. Even though I had great equipment and good chamois on my shorts, all that good stuff.
Still there.
Oh my gosh, those
saddle
sores.
Do the pros? I guess the equivalent of a callus.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that they, or maybe their gear is.
But you rode a lot prior to this.
You know, the pros don't ride that many hours a day. Like, you know, those folks in the Tour de France, they're riding, you know, 5 to 6 hours.
And they stand up a lot when they're biking.
Yeah.
It's a little different.
And they're not going through all of those extremes of temperature and of terrain. So, yeah, the saddle sores just became one more, you know, area of suffering, I guess, combined with the sunburn and the, you know, the mouth.
Well, you don't want to train with sandpaper on the inside of your thighs.
No,
that would not be
don't.
Nice.
No, you don't. You don't.
Little insight from the cheap seats here.
Yeah. For any of you out there preparing for this.
Right.
Yeah, but I had a masseuse that was part of the crew, and he was, I mean, he repaired my legs every time that I had, you know, they took a break, and that made a huge difference too, you know, just to make sure that those muscles were not being damaged excessively.
What happened to the bike? Are you going to sell it off? Are you going to keep it? Are you going to use it again?
Yeah, so I took three bicycles with me.
All right, bikes.
Yeah, three bikes. One specifically for the flats, called the time trial bike, and it's all arrow-shaped, you know, torpedo-shaped tubes.
Is that the one that they'll use in the pelodromes in the Olympics?
Yeah, no.
You know, a solid one wheel solid so that it doesn't...
Not quite solid, but yeah, it's got a deep dish rim on it.
Okay.
And so it's just really meant to go bullet fast on the flats, but it's no good for climbing hills. And so I had another one that was specifically for climbing, and then I had another all-round bike. So there were three bikes, and yeah, no, I have all three and keeping all three and
still riding them.
And still riding them.
Right on.
Yeah, I would think it's tough to get it out of your system after it's been in there for so long.
Yeah, I've taken some time off the bike, and it's healthy to do that just to, because
novelty
so
may not be there, but the enjoyment of it. Yeah. You must have enjoyed it. Otherwise, why do that? Why not do something else to do it? Yeah. Shoot, I had another question. It just totally escaped me. Challenge?
Well, it is your birthday.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, fatigue. Well, yeah, you said that there was a little bit of hallucinogenic activity going on. Not that you were spending time with mushrooms or anything else.
My goodness.
But, some of the mental fatigue.
Yes, sleep deprivation. Mm. Ooh, that was, I'd actually trained for that. I'd when I was doing my training for the race itself, I would go 3 hours of sleep a night for a long period of time just to get myself ready for that. But I did have some hallucinations from sleep deprivation, and I'd never experienced hallucinations before, and they were fascinating. They were actually quite pleasurable, to be honest with you. The thing is that I was lucid enough to recognize that they were hallucinations, that what I was seeing was not real. But I had two episodes, one in Kansas, where I was riding up a hill in the evening, and a bicycle appeared out of the trees next to me, 10 feet off the ground, and rode alongside me for about 45 seconds before disappearing back into the trees. And then I had another one in Indiana early morning where the road transformed from being this, paved asphalt roadway to being a very fine netting with a tropical rainforest, hundreds of feet below that netting. So I was basically in a suspended bikeway looking down on this tropical rainforest that wasn't real, but it was a kick in the pants, yeah.
So as you explained that or commented to the trail team, did they start to get concerned?
They were always concerned.
Okay,
they were concerned
a little bit more than normal?
Yeah. I think they became most concerned when I wasn't talking much, If I wasn't talking, that was a sign that, something's not right.
Something changed, yeah. So you can do it again?
I would consider doing it again.
I'm sure we'll be kept apprised when the time is right. Bedlam. Don't forget it, guys.
Got it. Happy birthday.
All right. Thank you very much. See everybody tomorrow.